Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Let's come aboard. Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Wednesday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Well, that's all that really matters. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away $2.5 million prizes during Super Bowl 55 that could be used to buy your dream home. See rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSweepstakes.com. We appreciate you being with us. How about this? Brian Jones is going to join us. Jones was once upon a time co-host of Geo and Jones right here in this time slot on CBS Sports Radio. We'll put a bow on the 2020 college football season with Brian Jones coming up here in 20 minutes. Also, your advanced analytics. Get your poll question answers in right now. The poll question today as we picked apart and analyzed Peter Schwartz's New Year's Eve spread. What appetizer should be the centerpiece of a party spread? Should it be a shrimp platter? Should it be pigs in a blanket? Should it be chicken fries? You can vote right now at CBS Sports Radio. And of course, our poll questions, always the most important questions that are facing us as a society and a sports landscape. But let's start this hour with the Seattle Seahawks, where yesterday I told you Pete Carroll was going to hang on to Brian Schottenheimer as the OC because Pete Carroll had said he was going to hold on to Brian Schottenheimer as the OC in his end of season press conference. They had scored more points this year than any Seahawks team ever. And when asked about making a change at OC, Pete Carroll said, we're not making a change. And then, lo and behold, a couple of hours later, they fire Brian Schottenheimer. I think this is part of Pete Carroll passing the buck. I think this is part that this was a collapse. And I think that the Seattle Seahawks are really lucky that other things, more memorable things happened wild card weekend. Namely, the Browns winning a playoff game. That seemed to be the overwhelming storyline. Number one, because it's the freaking Browns. Number two, because of how it happened, up 28-0. And number three, because it was the last game that we saw and it was in prime time. But the Seahawks were handed one of the worst losses in Pete Carroll's coaching tenure. They lost to a 10-6 Rams team at home that didn't really have a full quarterback, that chose to start John Wolford over Jared Goff because Goff had been so mediocre this season and had busted his thumb. And you saw Jared Goff trying to throw the football. It was like trying to throw a pizza. It was like pushing it. And only because of a couple of busted coverages by the Seahawks could Goff complete a touchdown pass. And Russell Wilson was completely shut down. It was 30 to 13 at one point in this game. And it was game, set, match, and over. And he throws a pick six. Wilson was terrible. And Wilson and the offense was really pedestrian for the entire second half of the season. And people kept pointing to, well, the Seahawks are balanced because of this defense. Look at this defense. But what it wasn't showing you was Russell Wilson and the Seahawks were beating teams ugly that were bad teams. The NFC East teams, the Jets, their second half of the season, the teams that they beat were by and large bad teams that couldn't score. So what I saw from the Seahawks down the stretch was very alarming. Very alarming. And what Carroll admitted was that they became infatuated with the deep pass, with the deep ball, because Wilson was so good at it in the first half that they just kept sticking to it. And it became alluring to do that. And that's, boy, that's the worst type of coaching. You get sucked into the sexiness of something. You get sucked into how pretty something is. And that's why you keep doing it. I mean, above all else, the Seattle Seahawks and a guy that has been to two Super Bowls in Pete Carroll and has won multiple national championships in college should understand the threat, the risk of doing something based on how it looks and how fun it is versus what's the most effective way for us to win. And I think that this is twofold. Number one, Brian Schottenheimer, like his dad, really stubborn. Really stubborn. And Brian Schottenheimer had a sexy whiz-bang offense early and might have had dreams of parlaying that into a head coaching job. At the very least, had dreams of this exciting downfield offensive aerial attack that would bring him attention and the offense attention and get Russell Wilson his MVP and all those things that you coach for besides just winning. And it stopped working because they couldn't really run the football. And it stopped working because defenses got hip to it. And it stopped working because they started dropping defenses two safeties deep. And Schottenheimer didn't adjust. That was his offense. That was his baby. And they were going to keep trying it because it was so fun. And if Schottenheimer is too stubborn to change, well, Pete Carroll with his experience has to say, it doesn't matter. We're not running the offense that way. And either Pete Carroll didn't have the smarts or the leverage over the offense to do that, or was caught up in the same thing. Man, this is fun. We'll just get Russell Wilson back to throwing bombs because that's what's fun. We like to have fun around here. And I'm chewing on this gum and I'm high-fiving my players on the sidelines and we're just going to do it that way. And that's a really poor way to address things as well. And the Seahawks are really lucky. The Bills won a playoff game, and that was a party. Tom Brady won an exciting playoff game, and that was notable. Lamar Jackson won his first playoff game, and that was a big headline. The Cleveland Browns finally won a playoff game for the first time in 18 years, and that was a story. And people just forgot about the middle of the day Saturday game where the Seahawks looked like puke. And Russell Wilson, who's never garnered an MVP vote and looked like the runaway MVP winner through week 8 of this year, went out with a whimper. And the Seahawks had to fire their OC because of it. They know how bad this was. They were 12-4. They didn't even win a playoff game. And since that Super Bowl loss and handing it or not handing it off to Marshawn Lynch, the Seahawks have not been the same. This was a really bad loss. And maybe firing Schottenheimer and bringing in somebody else who's more flexible, works better with Pete Carroll, what have you, is a chance to restart. But look, Pete Carroll's, he's got to help fix that. You know, he's one of the highest paid coaches in the NFL. He's one of the longest tenured coaches of the NFL. If he sees it not working, he has to be able to help adjust it. And not leave it completely on the offense and not be dazzled. Ooh, look at the shiny toy. So this is a failure on Pete Carroll as well. And having to fire an OC after the highest scoring season in franchise history says something. It says something about the team and it says something about the head coach. This is an interesting story out of the Miami Herald today that Bogues has brought to my attention. Multiple anonymous Dolphins players are wondering why Tua Tagovailoa is automatically the starter next year, saying that they didn't see that greatness, that automatic, he's got to be our guy type of ability to automatically install him as the starter next year. One player told the Herald, I understand what they said, in other words, calling him the starter next year, but I don't understand why. Multiple players admitted he was not outstanding as a rookie. They are not convinced Tua is going to be great in the future. These players were unimpressed during training camp and were caught off guard when he became the starter. They say he's a great guy, humble, quiet, and competitive, but they don't see that special trait into his skill set beyond just his accuracy. One of those Dolphins players, again, these are teammates, said he's not impressed with Tua's ball velocity or arm strength or ability to make off-schedule plays with his legs. If the big boys of the AFC are Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, and Josh Allen, maybe Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow and some others thrown in there as well, ultimately. But this one teammate said, those are the boys we got to beat, right? It looks right now like that's going to be a big challenge. So why did the Dolphins name Tua Tagovailoa the starter when competition should be for everybody going into next year, especially from a rookie that is coming off an up-and-down season? Well, I think it's probably twofold. I think, number one, it's strategic. You don't go into the draft with a high draft pick, number three overall, and say, yeah, we haven't made a decision on our quarterback yet. What you do is you say, we got our quarterback. We're all set, okay? Because if you don't, then you leave total speculation up to the hysteria around the draft process. Are the Dolphins going to draft a guy? Are they going to replace Tua? Are they going to trade Tua? What are they going to do? Are they happy with Tua? Do they got to go draft? Who do they draft? What quarterback do they draft? And you don't want to have to deal with that for 4 months. So strategically, you just take that out of the equation. I think also, sometimes you give a person responsibility, hoping that they grow into it. And I think that maybe part of this is, Tua's our guy. We have total faith in him. We trust him. And you say that even if you don't, because you want Tua to begin believing in himself that he is the guy. That's where I would be. Look, behind the scenes, I wouldn't promise Tua any... Well, behind the scenes, if I was talking to my GM or my head coach, or I'm not talking directly to Tua, I'm saying, we don't know about Tua. We don't have any evidence he'll definitely be great. He didn't look like Herbert. He didn't look like Burrow before the injury. We don't know, but we can tell him that to help him develop confidence, develop into being the guy, and maybe also have the team believe in him that he's the guy. We say we believe in him, then they'll believe in him. I think that's probably part of this as well, because Tua wasn't great this year. They won some games with him. They put themselves in position to get to the playoffs in week 17 with him. But he wasn't great. He had some really good moments, but he wasn't great. So maybe you don't have to expect him to be great because he was coming off the major injury, didn't have a training camp, didn't have an offseason, was thrown right into the fire middle of the season, and Fitzpatrick had been playing well. So maybe he didn't have to be great this year. Maybe he has to be great next year or year three or what have you. But I think these are head games that they're doing beyond, without a shadow of a doubt, believing in Tua. I think it's strategic with the draft, and I think it's strategic in building the roster to believe Tua is the guy and maybe to make Tua believe is the guy versus I don't think Chris Greer and Brian Flores right now are like, oh my God, no questions asked. He's our guy for the future. What do you think about this Tua story here, Mraz?
I'm fascinated by this. Namely, let me just say, that this sounds like something you would hear out of a team with a culture problem and a locker room problem. And that's basically the opposite of what the Miami Dolphins have been under Brian Flores. It just kind of felt like they were the ultimate team and everybody bought in. So to hear everybody not buying in from this locker room, anonymous things, really, how bad must Tua be in that room? How much must he not be looked at as a leader in that room? And for players, even anonymously, to not understand the business part of this, DA, which is, like, Tua's going into next year as the starter, and the team's telling you he's the starter because they just spent the fifth overall pick on him, and the team still, despite its deficiencies in his rookie year, won 10 games, and we're right in it for the playoff hunt, and I know it's probably aggravating, and some players maybe feel like the reason they're not in the playoffs is because of Tua, but that's why, because any quarterback that a team spends that asset on isn't going to throw him out and not expect him to be the starter after year one. But for this to be coming out of that locker room led by Brian Flores, there feels like there's something more there with a disconnect between Tua and his leadership, I think more so than his ability with these players.
Well, maybe it's just that locker room is built through everybody overachieving. There weren't any stars on this team. And nobody's a household name. Outside of Tua, most people could have named one member of the Dolphins. And maybe they just all view it as, hey, everybody's busting their ass to win a job. That's why we're 10-6. That's why we went from disaster to almost the playoffs, is because nothing was guaranteed to anybody. And now the guy that might have been the most pedestrian at his job this year is the one guy that gets it guaranteed. Maybe they look at it like that. Like, why is he the one guy that gets his job guaranteed next year when everybody balled out more than him?
I guess, but, if Tua stunk for 6 weeks and they had another veteran next year, do we think that they wouldn't try to bench him or wake him up or anything? Like, this is, to me, this is impatience with a young quarterback, which any team or any guy in the NFL should know that this is what comes with the territory. I look at this the same way I look at how ridiculous some of us were for saying that Lamar Jackson couldn't win a playoff game. It was his rookie year, and he's a fifth overall pick. Give the guy a chance to improve and get better this offseason without saying he shouldn't be guaranteed the starting job. And we don't know that he would be guaranteed the starting job. Like you said, understand the business of it, draft, free agency, all of that. There needs to be some kind of power by the team to not weaken their stance on Tua as well.
The Dolphins are really close to being really good. They just need a better offense that can create big plays, and that starts with the quarterback. So Tua right now is the key for the Dolphins being a real contender. If he's great, they're a real contender in the AFC versus, a limited team that has to win games on defense and special teams, which you're only going to get so far doing that. When we come back on the show, Brian Jones is going to join us to put a bow on the 2020 college football season to look ahead to next year. TA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
You're so funny.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
You can listen to us across the great CBS Sports Radio network and also on SiriusXM Channel 206 and stream us on the CBS Sports app and the radio.com app. The national championship game is in the books. Alabama wins its sixth championship under Nick Saban, his seventh overall. Joining us here on the show to break down this year in college football and look ahead to 2021 is our good friend. He used to be part of the G1 Jones show right here on CBS Sports Radio. Now you watch him with the SEC on CBS and Inside College Football. Brian Jones, BJ, wake your ass up.
Dio, what's up, baby?
How you doing?
I'm well, man. All's good. Season's over. Wrapped up with that wet firecracker we witnessed in the championship game. But the fact that we even embarked on a season is a testament to the wherewithal of all these players and coaches, and especially as the training and medical staffs across the country.
Did you feel like the fact that it was a blowout just meant Alabama was that much better than everybody in college football this year?
Well, I going into it, first I was wondering how much healthier or how numb Justin Fields would be, as he was numb in that second half versus Clemson, of course, after taking that wicked shot. So I was wondering how healthy he could be. If he had the inclination to use his legs, which he didn't after taking that shot versus Clemson, and he didn't need to because he was dropping dimes on their secondary. But I knew he was going to have to use his wheels, which he did from time to time, but definitely wasn't enough. I thought it could be a game that mirrored what we witnessed in the SEC championship game with Florida, because I thought that Ohio State had that type of speed with Wilson and also Olave at the wide receiver position, the way they've been utilizing their tight end. So it was a full-fledged offensive assault versus the Tigers. They didn't have that consistency, of course, versus Bama. And it goes back to the guys they were missing on the offensive line. And you know, you don't make excuses. You just go out there with who you have. But Alabama, especially when you're not fully loaded, they can really whip up on you when you are, and it's definitely going to be an uphill climb when you're not.
I'm always interested in the Saban versus Bear Bryant debate because there were challenges that Bear Bryant faced that Saban doesn't, and there are challenges that Saban faces that Bear Bryant doesn't. Who do you think had a more difficult road to their championships as a head coach?
I'm going to go with Nick Saban. And I say that because when I look at past records, and I'm not sure when Bear Bryant won his first championship there at Alabama, but it was way before there was desegregation. So when I look at those past records, that's why I'm so pleased with what Major League Baseball did, incorporating the records that were amassed by guys in the Negro Leagues way back when. I always looked at those records with a jaundiced eye, man, because we were not an inclusive America, and we definitely weren't inclusive as far as sports were concerned. So I would say to you that Nick Saban had the tougher role to hold, considering the more inclusive environment in which, you know, these rosters are chock full of black players, and the way he's gone about developing those players. And, you know, in case in point, the reason Alabama had black players because of Sam Bam Cunningham and USC beating them up there in Tuscaloosa, I believe it was, that first matchup. So I'm going to say Saban.
It's interesting because, yeah, Bear Bryant won his first championships back in the 60s, 61, 64, 65. Condridge Holloway wasn't in the SEC until the 70s, and that was the first black quarterback in the SEC. So you're right, desegregation still needed to happen by the time Bear Bryant was first winning his championships. In terms of the longevity of Saban, look, he's been there now for a decade plus. He's won six championships. He's only 69 going on 70. He's got to have another 5 years left in him at Alabama, right?
Dude, that's the new 50, right? 70, 69, 70, the new 50. Hell, I'm not turning 53, and I'm still acting 23. And I don't plan on changing. So you look at Coach Saban, man. I don't think the dude ages. He takes good care of his body. He exercises. He works out. There's legendary little inner coaching staff basketball games they have on a weekly basis. So he looks fine, looks no worse for wear. I was hearing rumors that he might resign after winning another championship. If, you know, still may happen, who knows? I don't know. But I think he looks great. His coaching hasn't fallen off. And no matter how much turnover there is on that staff, the mainstay is him and his philosophy, and everyone jumps on board, and they master his approach. And, you know, while Steve Sarkisian is the new coach in Texas, I hope some of that gravy from Pete Carroll's days and also from the Nick Saban days spilled over onto his plate and will help my Longhorns. But Saban he's the master. He's the best I've ever seen. Of course, I grew up watching Bear Bryant there at the end of his career, but Saban, he's the greatest of all time, in my opinion.
Brian Jones joins us from the SEC on CBS and CBS College Football. You can't just drop that nugget and then just move on so easily. You had heard rumors.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
You had rumors be told to you that Nick Saban was going to resign after this national championship, and then you dropped that it still could happen?
I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's what was told to me personally, yes, that He may step down. The dude has done all you can do. He's won more championships than anyone, and he's made a hell of a lot of money, and he's making even more off the field. So, yes, that's what I was told. And I was told that by the same guy that told me Sark was going to be my next coach at Texas.
So do you think this offseason there's a good chance Nick Saban steps away from the game?
I don't know what the percentages are that he would. I'm telling you as it was conveyed to me. He wins another championship, there's a possibility he may say, okay, enough is enough, I hang out in this business world.
So it wouldn't shock you if that happened?
It wouldn't shock me, no.
Here I am saying that Nick Saban's going to be around for another 5 or 6 years, and then you're like, you know what? He might retire in the next 2 weeks.
Well, stranger things have happened in this game, right?
I mean, I don't know. Have they? Have they?
How many championships do you need? I know it's all about winning those titles there. It's similar with Richard Pryor there. He said, money's like cocaine. Too much is never enough. So too many championships may not be enough for Nick Saban. But as I said, my source, who's been spot on about a number of things, not just this season, but multiple seasons that I lean on heavily, he shared that with me. So we'll see if it transpires.
Ryan Day took over for Urban Meyer, and Ohio State continued to win. There was really no drop-off there. Do you think whoever took over for Nick Saban this year, this offseason, or 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, would have a drop-off, or is this such a machine Alabama will just keep winning?
Depends on that person, and depends on their personality and how they ingratiate themselves with that program and the players that make up that program. It's hard, man. There was a reason Alabama, much like my Texas Longhorns, were in the wilderness prior to Nick Saban stepping on campus. They had no continuity. They had no consistent success on and then put in place his methodology and his philosophy. So, you know, that's difficult to assess. Without knowing who that person is and how they would go about maintaining what Nick Saban has built during Alabama. If it was so easy to repeat, we'd see people knocking him off more often than not. And none of his assistants who've been there, of course, have been able to defeat him. And the main reason is because the caliber of players he's able to recruit. Now, Georgia is close. Clemson, of course, has knocked him off twice. So they're getting the same types on a consistent basis as far as recruiting is concerned. But then it's about developing them and having everyone buy in. That's the key. And what really stands out to me is that it doesn't matter who's coaching those cats. Look at all the defensive coordinators, the offensive guys that he's had. There's been turnover on that staff, but nothing really changes as far as their success rate.
Who's the most interesting team in your mind going into 2021? Something that a team that you just don't know, but you're like, ooh, I can't wait to find out.
Texas.
Okay.
That was a layup. You know, we'll see how Clemson rebounds from the beatdown they took from Ohio State. Ohio State, will they continue to be the lead dog there in the Big Ten, losing their quarterback possibly, and who steps in there? They recruit as well as anyone. You know what? I'm gonna say, you know, my hated Aggies. Texas A&M. Jimbo Fisher's put his fingerprints all over this program. Their physical team built in the manner that you have to be built there in the SEC, especially the SEC West. They can run the rock up front. You know, they're going to go through a quarterback change. It's what I don't believe Kellen Mond has announced yet. If he has, I missed it. You know, they are so physical up front. They got a lot of upperclassmen on that offensive line, and they have recruited like crazy also. Their defense, man, I got to share this, and sorry, my Longhorn faithful, but I was sitting there watching them in that game versus North Carolina, and there's so much talent on that football team. Yes, they were boat raced by Alabama, I know that. But then they went undefeated, unscathed the rest of the way. And that's a testament to that coaching staff and the type of kids they've recruited. And their mental stability to overcome that loss and get it done in myriad ways moving forward the rest of the season. So A&M is a team I would watch out for.
Interesting. Brian Jones joins us this morning on the show, CBS Sports college football analyst. BJ, it's always awesome to catch up with you. Happy New Year, and thanks for dropping one of the most massive college football nuggets of all time, that Nick Saban may retire today.
Hey, man, I aim to please. You got it. Anytime, CA.
Thanks, buddy. All right.
Okay.
Brian Jones joining us this morning on the show. Jones is the best. I'm like, yeah, you know, Saban looks young and dominant. He could probably coach for another 5 years or so, right? Brian Jones is like, yeah, you know, 70's the new 50. He can coach forever. He keeps himself in shape. He's doing great. He works out every single day. I mean, he could resign today, but I mean, I think he could coach for a long time here. Wait, what? Yeah, you know what I said. I've been told that he could resign today. Well, what? Let's go back to that record scratch. Jones said he was told by a good college football source that gave him that Sark was going to be the next head coach of Texas, that if Saban won this national championship, he might just hang it up and say, I'm good, that's my career, I'm going into the business world. What? Whoa. Wow. Well, that's what we like to call a spicy meatball around here on the DA show. Woo! Life comes at you fast. So, Bogues, if you could just rewrite all of your updates for the rest of the day and say college football insider for CBS says Nick Saban could resign at any moment now, that would be helpful.
Yeah, what was that, secondhand speculation? Is that a fair assessment of that? BJ passing along somebody else's guess at what Saban might do?
I mean, he's saying it's a good source. It wouldn't surprise him. College football CBS analyst said it wouldn't surprise him if Nick Saban resigned this offseason. That's a big deal.
We'll start, though, I guess, for now with the NBA, right? We knew James Harden was unhappy.
Yeah.
We knew James Harden was unhappy with the Rockets, but he wouldn't say it out loud until last night after their second ugly loss in 3 days to the Lakers. Harden said his team is just not good enough right now. He called the situation crazy and doesn't know how to fix it. Then he got up and left, taking no questions from reporters. That happened after a 117-100 loss to the Lakers. LeBron scored 26. We still don't know what's up with Kyrie Irving. He missed his fourth game in a row for personal reasons last night, but the Nets won thanks to Kevin Durant.
Drives right, steps back, three on the way. Good! OKD! 33! And the Nets with a 7-point lead and a timeout with 27.9 seconds remaining.
That is Chris Carino on Nets Radio. Durant scored 34 to lead Brooklyn out of an 18-point hole for a 122-116 win over the Nuggets. The Sixers outlasted the Heat, 137-134 in OT. Joel Embiid, 45 points and 16 boards. The Spurs finished road trip at 4-1 after a 112-102 victory in OKC. And Utah rolled through Cleveland, 117-87. The Jazz now go home because tonight's game in Washington has been postponed because of COVID. The Celtics and Magic aren't playing either. Washington and Boston wouldn't have had the required 8 players. There are stronger rumors this morning that Urban Meyer is getting closer to taking the Jaguars' job. 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, the apparent frontrunner for the Jets' vacancy, his second interview with the team reportedly continuing this morning. The Seahawks have fired offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer, but extend GM John Schneider through the 2027 draft, and the Bears are expected to keep head coach Matt Nagy and GM Ryan Pace. Defensive coordinator Chuck Pagano is retiring. College hoops, number 7, Michigan, still rolling.
Yep. Okay.
Kick into the corner, Livers ponders a three. Now he'll drive, shut off, backing down against Ford now. Still dribbling with the left hand. Will he set him up for that fade? Yes, he will, and it rattled out, but an offensive board and a stuff from Sean D. Brown. 22 straight. Oh, Michigan is pummeling the Badgers.
That is Brian Bosch from Learfield IMG College. The slam gave the Wolverines a 62-26 lead on number 9 Wisconsin. They won 77-54. Michigan, apparently the first team ever to beat 3 ranked opponents in a row by 19-plus points.
Okay.
Number 6,
For
Kansas
the record,
losing.
If you thought that Bogish made a mistake last hour by calling college hoops college poops, That's an inside joke on the show. This stems from Mraz calling college hoops college poops, right?
Yes, but now we've all said the word college poops over the last 2 years, so I think the origins. We
college
lose it.
Poops?
But it is something referenced every day on the show, so do not think Bogus is making a mistake. That's a wink and a nod that that's what we call college hoops.
And
college
you,
poops on the same
you,
dime?
You mistakenly called it college poops.
There you go. That's the original drop. I slipped and called it college poops. Because, well,
on a
of
dime.
Course
a,
I did.
A trusted journalist and broadcaster like Andrew Bogish would not have mistakenly called college hoops college
Well, hold on,
poops.
Hold on, sweetheart. I thank you for supporting me, but I have said pro boner on the radio, so I definitely could probably say
Yeah, but Bogish, that's poops. A legal term.
Pro boner. veteran righty Corey Kluber
pro
throws
boner.
For MLB. MLB teams today in Florida. The two
I think we're all pro boner.
Boner. And the NHL season begins today with 5 games. The Penguins and Flyers are first at 5:30 Eastern. DA, back to you.
Ooh. All right. Thank you, Boge. When we come back, we have a big poll question today. What should be your appetizer centerpiece at a party?
And did Brian Schwartz... Jones just drops a nugget. We're coming back with this poll.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let me talk about the future of the Alabama Crimson Tide program. And then the poll question, should a shrimp platter be the centerpiece of your party?
Chicken?
Let me address what it would mean if the greatest head coach of all time abruptly resigns today. And would you serve chicken fries at your New Year's
at his
Eve
going
party?
Away party? Wait. Shrimp cocktail or bagel Wait. Bites?
Chicken? DA has hammered us about pushing news out whenever we have it. And the moment we get really big news, he can't wait to get Schwartz and pigs in a blanket in.
Just trying to follow the structure here. Follow the script. Yeah, that's also a good wake-up call. It's like, by the way, maybe you should rethink DA opting to talk about the chicken fries over the resignation of Nick Saban. Maybe you should get your priorities straight, dude. You call yourself a broadcaster. All right, that's coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, the question today, what appetizer should be the centerpiece of your party spread? 44% of you believe it's pigs in a blanket, beating out by just a small margin shrimp platter, which had 42% of the vote, and 14% was chicken fries. Schwartz had all of these dishes as part of his party platter for New Year's Eve. How do we know? He took a picture of it and posted it on all of his social media channels, and of course we had a report on it. The frozen food market size was valued at $290 billion in 2019 and estimated to reach $400 billion by 2027. Frozen food market. So Americans eating healthy. So Brian Jones just joined us here on the show, college football analyst for CBS and the SEC on CBS Inside College Football, and said his source, who has been pretty good to him in the past and told him that Sarkisian was going to be the next head coach of Texas, said that if Nick Saban wins this championship game, he's going to resign. Now, this is not Jones specifically. This is a source telling this to Jones, but Jones says he leans on this source quite a bit. And this was before the national championship game when he said this. Now, of course, Alabama did win it. I did have an idea. I did have a thought when he won this championship, and I was looking over his bio and I was discussing and looking at him versus Bear Bryant when we did the show yesterday, kind of researching some thoughts in the show and the take, etc. Was thinking to myself, I wonder how long Saban will do this for. Because he has done everything. He has won a national championship at LSU. He has won now six at Alabama. He's won six national championships in 12 years. He has won it with a defensive-first philosophy, a run-first philosophy, now a pass-first philosophy. He's had Heisman Trophy winners at running back. He's had Heisman Trophy winners at wide receiver. He has been to national championship games and won in a blowout. He's won in close fashion. He's lost in a blowout and lost in close fashion. I mean, there really isn't anything left for Nick Saban to accomplish except for this kind of never-ending thirst to win and this kind of focus that this is the job and it is never enough and you just keep doing it for as long as you can do it well. This is Tom Brady's thought. I'm going to keep quarterbacking until I suck. I'll retire when I suck. And if Nick Saban takes the same approach, I'll keep coaching until we suck. Then this certainly would not be the end date. So who knows? I don't know this source. I don't know how much Jones should trust this source. I find it very hard to believe that suddenly Nick Saban says enough is enough because it just feels like this could go on forever and that he's got plenty more left in the tank. Maybe this season took more out of him than normal because he did deal with COVID himself, because he did deal with all the COVID restrictions, because maybe college football's changing amongst our very feet right now, under our very feet with the name, likeness, and image debate and players getting compensated and things like that. I would be shocked if Saban walks away this offseason, but Brian Jones said he wouldn't be because his source said so. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, breaking down the Schwartz party platter.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
This is separated from the chicken fries only from the Happy New Year paper plate.
Yes.
But that would be fried dumplings?
No, DA.
No,
that is spinach dip and salsa, and that are the classic Tostitos scoops.
A little bit too buttery.
Oh, wow.
Now, why you think those are dumplings, I could totally understand it, because going past Peter Schwartz spreads, or any spread really, you would expect just the bag of chips to be out there. We reach your paws in there and dip away.
Yeah, so, this is real fancy. They put the chips on a plate.
I like mayonnaise.
Bottom left-hand corner, I can't tell what this is. They look toasted, maybe a little burned, maybe a little browned. What is that?
Guys, those are the TGI Fridays frozen potato skins that have been overcooked to Christmas there. I've been guilty of buying these myself, and oftentimes they become misshaped. As you notice, the top right ones up there are a little smaller than the rest of the ones. They're a little bulkier.
What are those? Those are round. They appear to be maybe have some spread on them and maybe some reddened something on them. They're circular.
Well, DA, this is where when you go real fancy with the quiche-style pigs in a blanket and the shrimp, you need to save a little money elsewhere. Those are classic bagel bites, DA.
Oh,
bagel bites.
Yeah,
so,
right.
As a nice little flavor enhancer.
Okay. Bottom right-hand corner, that appears to be something green, which is, to me, the biggest upset of the day, that there is something vegetable-laden or green on this table. But they are deep-fried in some way, and there is some type of white dipping sauce next to it. So what are we talking about there?
So, DA, this is the reason I knew they had the Friday's potato skins to the left. A lot of times at these Long Island supermarkets, the box of Friday's appetizers are $2 for $5. $2 for $5.
That's all you need, baby.
Is a standard deal you will find here on Long Island where Peter Schwartz lives.
This is like the Tony Romo breaking down Long Island supermarket.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Mraz even knew the pricing of the apps that Schwartz served at his New Year's Eve party. So we found out that most people believe pigs in a blanket should be the centerpiece of a party spread. Mraz, would you agree with that over a shrimp platter?
Well, not everybody loves seafood, and everybody loves mini dogs. So while shrimp might be the fanciest, DA, I think the bigger crowd pleaser probably is pigs in a blanket. It's fun for all ages. It's fun for the whole family. I'd pay the most for shrimp, but I understand why everybody would flock to the pigs.
Okay. Well, it's a big upset to me. I love a shrimp platter, but that shrimp platter looked gray and old, so maybe that was the reason the vote didn't come in that direction. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of The DA Show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish, the update extraordinaire. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Tomorrow, Jamal Charles and Jack Youngblood, two NFL former Pro Bowlers, will join us. I'm DA, and the Mothership disconnects.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.